Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 11, Episode 1, titled Acheron's Call. Acheron's Part 2. Part 1. This is the first part. Assuming there will be a second part next week, who knows? Maybe this is it for a intrepid band of survivors, but I somehow doubt it.
Could be a three-part.
That's also on the table. What if the rest of the season is just Acheron 12, Acheron part 20?
I'm here for it.
All right. You know what Acheron is? Before we get started on what we thought.
Acheron's a river that runs through actually runs through real life Greece, but also runs through the underworld.
Yeah.
Like the Styx River is one of its tributaries, and that's the boat that Charon? Is it Charon? The ferryman of hell, you pay him a coin, he takes you across into the underworld, and you cross the river Acheron. So that's creepy, you know, a river of the dead, a river of the damned, kind of reminds us of the walk that they're doing, this like, what would you call the subway, but a river of dead.
Well, I think we haven't quite seen the Acheron part of it. I mean, certainly we've seen the dead, sure. But the river part, I think that's coming next week. Like, that water line is pretty ominous. And I can imagine just a scene of fucking, just floating around with walkers in the water. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a bad time. And I got to say, I felt like the walker effects were noticeably, I mean, not better, but like just uniformly excellent this episode.
Oh, yeah.
The bony soldiers all the way to, like, we got like a bloater, fat zombie. Love a fat zombie.
Yeah.
It all looked really, really good. And I admire that 11 seasons in there, Greg Nicotero still getting up and going to work.
Yeah. Or his assistants. Who knows? I don't know what Greg Nicotero is building. One-to-one scale models of 2001 props. From what I understand.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah. He loves that shit.
Cool.
Keep him
from behind the camera. That's all I ask.
Right. No day night cycle when you're underground though. So
that's true. That's fine. True. Yeah.
What'd you think of this episode?
I think it's going to be a fun episode to talk about. And there's a lot of stuff that I liked about, there's a lot of individual set pieces I liked. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing with Negan. I thought I knew what they're doing with Negan, but like him just like doing the, I beat your husband's brains out, Maggie. Bam. Right. Especially when he, up to that point, I felt like he was righteous. Like he was right on and he threw that in. I'm like, why? Cause like,
yeah,
it's something I worried about from the last episode, him staring her down and mean mugging her and grinning at her. And I felt like they walked a bit about that back and I'm like, oh good, that was just to get people twisted up. It seems like they're going to jump right to it. I don't know how I feel about that.
It was surprising that they got so into the Maggie Negan stuff right off the bat. I expected it to fester a little while.
It could have been a slow boil, I think.
I don't know if that's better or worse. I'm not totally sold on the way they did it here, but
It could just be Negan's a shit and we're going to have to adjust for the fact that he's going to be, you know, maybe not a bad guy, but who was that fucker on Battlestar, the Belteshazzar?
Is it Baltar? Baltar.
Yeah. One of those type of guys, you know, where I'm not saying he's going to work against the group, but he might work against the group.
Yeah, he's going to work in his own self-interest in a lot of cases, and it might just be against the group.
Right, which is kind of at odds with the emotional journey that I went with him in the last episode.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what they're doing with that. I guess a lot of people were upset about the cliffhanger nature of it, but I don't feel like this is a real cliffhanger.
No, it's a two-parter. I'm totally willing to forget that. Like, if your cliffhanger resolves itself next week, no problem.
Yeah, not a big deal. And it's also like, that's not the cliffhanger, because unless you're just a complete rube that thinks Maggie's going to die.
Right.
The actual cliffhanger is what the fuck the group does when they find out what Negan's done and what Maggie says. And, it, you know, like, that is the actual, like, what is it going to do to the group dynamic, to the show trajectory, to the character? That's the cliffhanger. And I think that was fairly effective, even though I find his behavior kind of like, you know, not making a lot of sense. But that's might be because, like, I'm judging Negan on what I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with his set, and clearly, you know, he and I are not the same.
The character I found a little strange this episode was Maggie. I'm still getting to know the new Maggie, but there's some old Maggie in there, which made me kind of sit back and go, what? When we got to that scene, but we'll talk about that later in more depth.
And there's the other thing is, like, I just feel like, I don't know what's worse, when Walking Dead sets up a scenario that's just ill-conceived and impossible and but yet executes it on camera, or whether they set up a scenario like that and just skip yada yada through how it actually happened and just get to the result they want. Because yeah. I would defy anyone to explain to me how the hell they went from these guys are fucking for an hour on their break to we just waltz out of there, grab their armor, and we're home free.
Yeah, to the Luke and Han Death Star gambit. Sure.
Exactly.
Yes. I don't know, and it's probably better that they don't try and show it.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it is not good, is what I would call it. Like, just find a different way, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's this, like, so I'm back to taking a few pot shots at the Walking Dead. But I just feel like that on the whole, it was pretty exciting. It's kind of like, I don't really know what the hell's going on or what to think about the Commonwealth. Like, I was like, I found myself on Eugene's side until a couple things happened. I'm like, well, I don't know, because, you know, I've been arguing the whole time. I was like, is what the Commonwealth doing anything worse than what Michonne or Rick have put newcomers through?
Right.
But like, at some point when people are getting torn away screaming and taking a reprocessing, and they come out of that a shell of themselves, like, I don't know what they're doing, but it's probably not good. But then they throw the Yumiko sister curveball into the end of it. So
they do. Yeah. Still a lot of question marks around Commonwealth.
Yeah. I don't think that we've seen it, to the extent that they're an antagonist. I don't think we've seen an antagonist like this before, where if they're evil, it's probably the banal type. It's not the cackling aquarium tanks full of heads. Barbed wire baseball bat. It's more of like bureaucracy and pure unadulterated with emotion utilitarianism, and seeing how that kind of can be a hell on par with the Sanctuary or Woodbury or any of those places.
Yeah, there's a couple of cool things they do visually in this episode that kind of paint a picture of what the Commonwealth, some of the philosophy of the Commonwealth, which with the money is an interesting one. Like, they've got a whole cart full, like a big ass laundry cart, like think Gus Brings laundry stuff, full of cash, and all the president's faces are X'd out, right? And it's set to be incinerated. So like, that tells you something about the Commonwealth and how they feel about both the old society and the new society they're creating.
We're just fanatical about coinage, man. This
sure,
is a foreign,
yeah,
this is,
maybe they're on the gold standard. They were real proponents of that.
They're on the Nuka-Cola pop-top standard.
None of this fucking fiat currency. We're on a lease-based economy.
Bill, it's not based on shit. Yeah. I'm a sovereign. These are sovereign citizens of the Commonwealth, and they're not going to be having any of this fucking fiat currency.
Right.
Could be. Trading bitcoins. Could be. They use 99% of their solar power to generate, to keep the blockchain going.
Right. Got a couple of Xeon processors just chugging away on that.
Yeah, yeah. That's what reprocessing means. If you don't meet their test, they put you back. You're assigned 6 months on a treadmill to generate electricity for the blockchain. You're literally processing crypto equations.
I love it. I don't know. So yeah, the episode not amazing, not awful. It's somewhere in the middle. I have a lot of questions, and hopefully you can help me sort through them as we sort through this episode.
I also liked it. Like I now feel like I have a no shit like situation report on what the communities like, what their exact standards are, and like their prospects, and because like I felt like I wasn't sure how badly Alexandria was ravaged by the Whispers. I'm not sure if the producers knew until they started filming this season. But they're like fucked. It's fucking bleak.
Yeah.
No, Reg's walls have fallen, and the stuff that's still up is shaky. They got no food. They got enough places to put people. Their power it's time to abandon ship, it seems like.
It could be. Could be. We'll see. Might make the big move to Meridian this season.
Curious to see what horrors await us in Meridian.
Doesn't sound like an AMC move to, you know, final season of a show. We're going to go all out and create this, not only one, but two entirely new communities with their own sets. That just seems like a not very AMC thing to do.
On the other hand, if the set is essentially you just take over an abandoned elementary school in Georgia and move in a couple of containers and trailers, then yeah, I can see them doing
that.
I can really see them doing that.
I will be disappointed if it's a couple of trailers and a makeshift fence that Maggie is touting as Meridian being this place of abundant food and animals.
Of those temporary Katrina shelters from the FEMA auction that has trailed them up to the backwoods of Georgia, and here's your new set.
God, I think it's
like, you know, they've destroyed a lot of the distinctive sets. There is no more Hilltop. There is no more Kingdom.
Right.
That's one thing, I guess, when they're talking about food is like, why is Oceanside got wiped off the map? Did they?
No fish. The oceans
are done. Did they destroy all the fish for 200 miles of coastline? Like, what the hell? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Beta had his guys on a no plant diet. It was all fish constantly for like 6 months during the winter, gobbling up all the fish in the ocean.
Had to be they you know, we have in the 21st century done a pretty good job with this oceanic collapse. The Whispers just finished it.
Yeah,
those tuna populations were just a three-legged stool with one crooked leg, and he just kicked it. Boom, done.
Anyway, why don't we take a quick break and then we'll get right into the recap.
Let's do it.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in a club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly Lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Okay, we start off with basically every single member of Alexandria. I don't know who's left behind, but the decrepit and the children, they're all out at this military hangar that is infested with a huge number of slumbering walkers. They sneak inside to get some and start packing out rations, the MREs, through the ceiling. Unfortunately, their rope rig, the pulley system, just sort of breaks. And Daryl manages to save some of the REs from falling, but a single drop of his blood, he cuts himself on the thing, and a single drop of his blood wakes up the entire pack of walkers, and they start attacking. There's this big battle. You know, everyone gets out safe, surprisingly, with even Carol stopping to grab a few extra MREs and Daryl's throwing knives on the way out.
Dude, I had a whole bit like, oh, we should do a bit where Daryl's like, damn, Carol, where are my knives at? You said my fucking Swiss Army knife, and I had to save your ass, my two, and where's my knife? And
no.
She pulls them up with her. So I'm like, well, bit canceled. But like, yeah,
probably for the best.
I don't know how she got those knives, but she got them, and
she did.
They're all whole.
I just don't know how they. I'm thinking all the way back to like Glenn in the Well, and I've never seen them rig a system that did not fail immediately and spectacularly.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this at least didn't fail immediately.
Carts like, break, like
yeah.
Everything.
How heavy were those? Were those these MREs like 5,000 pounds? Like that was like, even if it's a little frayed, that was a serious rope, man.
Right. And it was strong enough. Then the rest of the ropes are strong enough to haul people up. And those right. MREs are freeze dried, man. They're not going to be that heavy.
Yeah. I don't know. I will say that I really like them getting like, this is like an old school. Do you remember when before The Walking Dead came out, they like Darabont and company posted like a zombie Bible? I think we covered it on the show that eventually became The Watching Dead. It was called Zombie Drill. And they had all these like really cool rules for walkers and like how they emphasize like the different senses and how they could do this or that. And one of the concepts of these like wasted walkers who are essentially like the stealth zombies we joke about.
Yeah,
that like because they have no human targets for so long and are such a weakened state, they just kind of collapse and look like dead bodies until you disturb them or get close. They haven't really done a lot with that since like Herschel lost his leg. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to see kind of like the set piece where they had to be real sneaky and not like, you know, like going into the dragon's horde. And there's all these tempting targets, you know, like, oh, like you could still Carol's like, oh, should we stop and get these rifles and these bullets? And I thought it was a good scene. Pretty tense.
No, there are a couple of really good set pieces. I like the stuff they do later in the subway, in the train tunnel. That's terrifying, right? That Acheron style thing is yikes. They do one particular shot where you see all the bodies sort of like slowly writhing in the bags. And you're just like, oh, God, we have to cross this. That's really cool. And I like to see some of the survivors here putting themselves in harm's way to pack out more food. Like Lydia, like before she puts on her own mask, and I know they tell you not to do this, she goes and grabs the community's mask in form of MREs.
Right.
That was kind of cool. You know, like one person's life is not as valuable as the survival of this community. And I think people are making sacrifices for it, or potentially making sacrifices.
Yeah, and I know there was some in one of the feedback sections in the last couple of podcasts, someone mentioned about the switch from film stock to digital. And I guess when they ditched that, that's when you started seeing like all the drone shots and the, you know, different tracking shots and the virtual boom shots. And like, I guess because I thought this was a really good first sequence of the thing. And you had this like really foreboding shot of Daryl standing with his wings over the stormy sky. I watched the bonus materials of this material and Kang and company are pretty proud of that shot and it looked good.
Yeah.
But like, I guess like. This definitive, like when I was watching this, I'm like, oh, I'm glad they switched to digital because this dynamic is way better suits this show than the faux artisty art house film grain look that they were going. That fit Darabont's show.
Right. Right.
But this is no longer that show. So I like the sexy overhead shots and the tracking shots and the boom shots and all the more dynamic stuff you get with this gear. So yeah.
Speaking of boom shots. Dude, Daryl with the throwing knives. I'm super impressed. I mean, I will have loved to see him like throw a couple and then try and throw one more and it just hits him it hits the walker with the hilt or something.
Right.
With the handle.
Right.
I'd be like, that's right. Pretty funny. But holy shit, he's a great shot.
Yeah, Maggie got a head. I like that one, like she finally got like the 45 to work and it just like opened up that zombie's head. Like a bowling ball bag. That was fucking cool. Mm-hmm. And just like, yeah, the desperation of like, there's still stuff to get. There's still. And I even felt like, man, you could almost justify going back there because like how many bullets and rifles does this place right. have? It broke a little bit of my suspension of disbelief. Like the thought that this place, this fort would never have been taken down by anybody. Like nobody's ever tried to. Maybe it's just too many zombies. But like, damn, yeah.
This is one of those Georgie locations, I assume, right?
Is it
that
is
Maggie knew about that she took them out to?
Oh yeah, that they had some like
I would think so.
Down on, yeah, could be. It's a hell of a lot better than what Gabriel and Aaron were getting assigned.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. Like if they knew about this place before, I assume they just go here.
Yeah,
before they send them out to the Terminator's hideout.
Yeah, but a really good. I really like the slow motion blood. Remind me of like a Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
except for no one caught the drop. So like, and then there is something kind of cool and vampiric about the blood running down the zombie's face and
reviving,
like trickling into his mouth. And it's like, oh fuck, human man flesh. You know, that's cool. Also, before we move on,
yeah,
did you notice that all the ladies were down below in the combat roles and all the men were up top in support positions?
No.
Oh, good. And society has progressed.
At least this individual in society. Sure.
Yeah. But on my second notice, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Like literally all the ass kickers downstairs are the women and all the ass kickers upstairs that are just in a support role are the dudes. So
nice.
Cool. Easier to lift them out of the pit. Why not?
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes a certain amount of sense. And Lydia's probably not as heavy as Daryl.
Or was fucking
Jerry.
The quilted mountain.
Yeah, like, don't send him down there.
You need three pulleys and twice and braid some of these ropes for that to happen.
Yeah. Speaking of mountains, let's get to the next scene where the group arrives back at Alexandria and we get to meet some of Maggie's old friends, which I think are named Frost, Agatha, and Shoulders. Did you think this guy's name was Shoulders when Glenn runs up and says Shoulders? Sorry, not Glenn, Herschel.
I'm
just
going to
call this guy
dude.
Shoulders from now on because he's a beefy dude.
He looks like a Gooal, like one of those Gooal old dudes from Stargate. Right?
And that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
He's got, and it might just be the Egyptian thing on his arm, but I'm like, that dude pried off that gold seal at some point, and he could be true. But I like him. He's a cool guy. No one, like, I haven't even come up with nicknames for these people. Like I'm not gonna
shoulders.
Write down.
It's perfect.
Shoulders is guy. Okay, so that was the show provided one. But some of these people just like who? Literally who? Yeah, you gotta have a speaking line before I'll start taking you seriously. More
for
than
sure.
one. But Maggie knows him.
I only
him.
Caught Frost's name in retrospect. I was like on my second watch, and four scenes later, somebody says, "Oh yeah," and there's some dude named Frost in the background.
Well. I think that with 24 episodes to go, what do you think is the odds that they can actually make us care about any of these new folks, these Meridian folks?
Nah.
That's what I'm thinking. I just started caring about half the people that we added in season 9, the Magnas and the professors and the Kellys and
the
Connies.
And
like I said, half. I didn't say I cared for them all. I just rattled off that I care for half of these people. So we're the Meridian folks got a real uphill climb.
I swear I couldn't even remember what Magna's fate was at the end. Like I saw Magna down in the hangar and I was like, is she still alive? Does the show remember if she died? Because I don't. They might have just brought her back because her contract wasn't over.
She broke up. Her and Yumiko broke up. That's the only thing.
Gotcha.
And she still tried to steal a quarter of the Hilltop's food and had no repercussions from that. Still on my shit list.
All right. So the other thing in this scene is I really respect that they, when they were in the writer's room, they decided, you know what, Glenn's hat needs to be passed down to Herschel, unironically. Mm-hmm. And there was not a thought as to whether that might be too much, given that they have already done it with Rick's kid.
It's like, kind of shows a connection there, though. That's cool.
Is it cool or is it too much? Is it just like, okay, every kid in this town is going to have a hat, of the, I'm saying their that, dead like, parent.
If the beloved town founder, or I guess not founder, but savior, that has a cool hat to pass it down to his children twice, is run around wearing a dead dad's cool hat, then like every child that had a father or a mother who died that had a cool hat would right. probably wear it.
Lydia needs a fucking walker skin because her mom's dead and that was a cool hat.
That was not a cool hat, Jim.
That was a I don't cool know. Hat.
I don't know, like maybe in a Fangoria kind of way, but not in like a strolling around Alexandria kind of way. But the other thing is like I feel like I really grounded in like how bad Alexander's situation is. And I had to do a lot of telling, there's a lot of showing, a lot of like food lines with a lot of people glum. Mm-hmm. You know, Gabriel's there for Halloween. He's handing out whole potatoes for candy.
Yikes.
And he's like, that's what we got. So and also like I'm like, oh, they got a nice haul. So maybe they're setting up for us to tell a story of like, hey, the crisis is averted for now. They informed us that and we saw how much they took. It's going to last about a week.
That's so rough.
And that's what the rationing they're doing. So it's really fucking brutal. It's really fucking brutal.
Yeah, let's talk about that scene. What passes for a council meeting these days, I guess, happens. Their huge MRE fine has bought them a week. Food situation looks really bleak. Maggie says, hey, there's this place where we used to live before called Meridian. Has tons of food, water, crops, animals. There's one problem. It also has tons of reapers in it. And she tells them the story of how it fell to the reapers and says, we need to go take that back. And there's kind of a moment here where everybody's not sure if they want to go. Aaron's like, nah, we need to stay here and shore up Alexandria. But Daryl and Gabriel decide to go with the other Alexandrians just staying behind.
Yeah, you don't got food. You don't got much.
Yeah, that's true. You can have all the walls in the world unless you're going to eat cold rolled steel.
Yeah, what is it? There's a line about like the only thing standing between civilization collapse is like 7 missed meals. Or is it maybe it's some surprisingly low number, much lower than 20. Like that's where people start feeling desperate, you know,
feeling the hunger.
They're getting there.
It's interesting to me because Maggie tells a story about their best fighters, her included, and three of the people here. Shoulders and his party being lured away from the city and the Reapers coming in and sacking it, which is, I think, exactly what she is proposing to do here. Taking all of the best fighters from Alexandria, going to the Reaper city and leaving Alexandria totally exposed, not even with walls at this point.
Yeah,
there's an irony to the plan here, and I hope it backfires. I hope it just bites them in the ass.
Plus, it's like there's, and I don't know if the, I don't know if the show, because I could believe either way, if the show has not thought this through or if Maggie hasn't thought this through, but like the idea, like, you know, those Reapers really whipped our ass, but we caught one of them alone, which must mean there's not many of them. Like, what? Like, what if that's just a vanguard and they're like, yo, we got this cool place. We got a bunch of food. Bring all the other 200 dudes and your armored cars up. And like, you don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And also that one guy almost took you all out.
He should have by the rules of physics. Yeah.
Yeah. I just felt like they needed a little. I mean, they needed a little bit of more of like, this is acknowledgement that this is a suicide mission. I guess they did do that. But
Daryl hears that and his eyes light up. Did someone say suicide mission? I'm in. Yeah. Count me in. Yeah. Gabriel, too.
But I don't know. It just felt like a big assumption that like, oh, well, there's just a few guys and they just got way too much food that they can eat and all that stuff is still going to be there. Like, they're not going to. Yeah, but they're desperate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was enough in this scene for me to like understand why they would go for it, but also to kind of be on Aaron's side in this. I was thinking, okay, we need walls. But they also need food and they've got only a week. So,
and it would have been nice if someone had just thrown that in Maggie's face. Like, it's like, oh, so take all of our combat people to do this mission and
exactly what you did in Meridian. Yeah.
Yeah. With less walls and less protection. And at least for them. So they're like, hey, but okay, what's your plan? Stay here behind strong walls and starve. Like, have the debate so that we can't, you know, don't know that they're stupid.
Yeah.
But, I also, what do you think about Gabriel, Father Gabriel, volunteering for the mission, and Rosita like rolling her eyes so hard her eyeballs almost fall out. Like, this shit needs to stop within a couple of episodes, or I'm going to come out real hard against it. Like,
I half expected Tara to want to go, or sorry, not Tara, Rosita to want to go with them as well as Gabriel. And then I was thinking about this kid, and I'm like, if you idiots both go with this group,
they can't keep doing this. They can't keep having the same fucking fight. Like, come up with a coin flip or Rochambeau. Or like, well, you did last time, I did this time, but you both can't go because you got a kid that someone needs to be responsible for. And you're also two of the better fighters in the group, so you can't stay home.
And Rosita's clearly a better fighter than you. So
I will also grant that. So like, maybe that's like the fact that he's just assuming. But like, God damn it, fucking have this fight that they've been teasing around this fight for like several episodes. Just fucking solve it. I don't want them to be this to be a relationship issue because it's dumb and it's easily solvable.
Yeah.
You're on notice, Kang. Three more episodes and I'm done.
So that whole team heads out, and they've actually got Negan with them too, which I thought was interesting. He's kind of like indentured soldier here, I guess.
Like, what is his choice? Can he not go? Like,
no, doesn't get a choice. There's this huge storm on their way to Meridian, and they decide they're going to take shelter in a subway station, metro, whatever. Negan, who they forced to come along for his knowledge of the city, tells them which tunnels to get take to get to the city.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I do like the I like the Negan is like looking for angles and like trying to like form alliances, like he's on Big Brother or Survivor, and like everyone just brutally shutting him down. You know, like Negan saying, hey, we need to get rest, and Maggie overrides him, and like Daryl seems like he's kind of sympathetic to what Negan was talking about, and but then Negan tries and he's like, yeah, why do you want to talk to me? Because we're buddies. I thought that was pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like just kind of like subtle kind of interesting ironies, like that America doesn't tolerate racism poster in the background, with like, I thought that called to mind like Rick's famous like just dark meat and light meat. You know, it's the dead and the living is the only distinction that matters. And I feel like for the most part, the show has kind of like leaned into that.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, this is an incredibly diverse cast at this point, and it's never really an issue.
No. To their credit, they've fixed the problems they had early on with the diversity in the cast.
Yeah, the representation, and now it's like, it's all about, you know, whether you're fighting for the living versus fighting to die. So I like that, and it's like a nice little reminder of where we're at in the apocalypse.
As someone who has lived in a city with pretty good rail transport up in Chicago, I'm sure there were people looking at this sign for like Pyron Shady Grove and going, fuck yeah, that's the stop I used to take on my ride into work every day or something 2 years ago. Moments like that are always cool, where they show you like a real world stop from a city you know.
I tried to find out if it was a real world stop. I noticed Shady Grove exists in Maryland. It's part of like, that's where the University of Maryland is. Yeah. But I couldn't find the fire. I thought that Pyron would be pretty easy, or Farron. Is that some kind of death reference? But I couldn't find anything about it.
I couldn't either, but I'm sure there are people out there who were just pointing and going, yeah.
Right. Or they just made it up.
We're in the tunnels. There's all kinds of crazy noises from the storm. And Negan points out, oh, hey, there's a water line on the walls, which basically says these tunnels flood regularly. And everybody just tells him to shut up. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how it could be more dangerous getting rained on outside versus getting caught in an underground tunnel with a flood.
It's full of zombies. Dude, this is such a, like, Boston Rob's like, look, pal, I know subways. It's not a problem. Let's just go get Dunkin's and... I mean, you know more about caves probably than the average person, because you know we've
been in a couple.
Do a bunch of a caving and stuff. But like, what's the one thing you're always told before you go underground? One of these things.
Hold on to your butts. Oh,
and if it's going to fucking rain, stay the fuck out.
Yeah, flash floods inside a cave system are bad news.
You don't want to be several dozen feet in a underground in a closed tunnel when like all the rain in a 30-mile square area comes rushing down. And like, right. Negan's like, this isn't a theoretical thing. Like, honestly, all of our subway tunnels would be full of water if it weren't for active pumping and shit.
Yeah.
But like, he's like, this isn't theoretical. Look at the high water mark. We can tell that this happens a lot. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. It's worse ups. This is just so stupid.
It's
and
so reckless.
I was trying to think of like, again, maybe this is a budget problem, but like, I was thinking like in The Last of Us, you know, you could arrange a situation where like maybe a big bridge has collapsed and there's like a big several squares of zombie infestation. And it's like, well, we could go around, but it'll take too long. We're on a time. So like
they've done the tunnel thing. Remember that?
Yeah, they did. That was the Glenn and Maggie, where Maggie forgot she had a sister to worry about and all that kind of shit. But you know what I mean? Like you can have sensible reasons to like have to take a more dangerous course. But like it's raining too hard and maybe storming, so let's go under the tunnel. So stupid.
Not wanting to get wet is not a reason to go into the tunnel that floods all the time. Sorry.
No. And it just like that's already a fatal problem that you have no control over, and there's no easy way out if you're in it. But like, then you're going to add just a absolute fuck ton of corpses that are wanting to eat you here in a minute. And just like, I'm like, the problem is Negan made way too much sense, which they kind of pivoted into, but like, I don't think they needed made him so obviously right. It should have been a little bit more of a gray issue, or maybe I just know too much about underground tunnel flooding.
Maybe. The thing that really got me too, when, you know, they're underground in this tunnel that clearly floods, they're just kind of like strolling. They're just like, there's not a care in the world. They're just strolling through this tunnel. Maybe hustle up a little bit. You're in a death trap. Try and get out of it as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And also, you're worried about like, we got to make good time. We can't stop. But now you're just fucking strolling.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe walk double time people? And take some breaks.
Right. So I don't know. I did like at the end of the scene, Negan mumbles, "You're in on it," after Daryl tells him to shut up, which comes back later. I didn't pick that up on the first watch, but second watch I did. And then we get out of the tunnels and we go over to the Commonwealth, where Eugene is being assessed by auditors. Actually, all of them are. They ask him and the others a bunch of questions for 7 straight hours, apparently. And they want to know primarily the location of their settlement, I think. Or even that they have one, because they keep lying about it. Ezekiel identifies the guard as the guy in charge and starts to challenge him verbally, but he has a coughing fit. And then they're all reunited in their cage, and they decide they need to escape when they see somebody hauled off to reprocessing.
His benign goiter just really dries out the throat.
He
doesn't cough up blood. What do you think of this? What do you think of the split screen?
I liked it. Yeah, I had no complaints about this part.
Like the kind of like the broken. It wasn't like a straight line, which I wondered if they were emulating the comic book style. But I went and looked, and apparently that's not like, you know, Walking Dead's very straight, you know, the conventional comic book kind of layout and the way they frame it. But I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it made the show, it made the scene that could have it made the scene a lot more denser and entertaining, because like there was like the what the fuck of some of the questions they're asking. But there's also just like, Eugene was game for anything. Like, how many bowel movements? Do you want to know the color, the consistency? Do you want it to on the Heisenberg shit chart? You know, like vaccination. Do you want to know the dates for that? Like, everybody's like, who the fuck knows what? And he's just rattling off every zip code he's ever lived in.
Which are apparently all Dallas-Fort Worth zip codes, by the way.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
And it gave you, it allowed you to see the difference between the answers in a very, you know, stark contrast. Like, some of them were lying about certain things. They were all lying about a specific thing about their community. But then you got to see how they all answered different questions, and their personalities come through in that too.
Yeah. I wonder how much of this stuff you could take as canon. Like, is Ezekiel canonically the son of a Bible school teacher? Like, he was a zookeeper, yeah. But like you said, they're making a bunch of lies. I guess they would tell their individual details straight, though, huh?
Maybe. It's tough, because he lies about his cancer, so...
Right.
What else is he lying about?
But Yumiko also, holy fuck, Ivy League, studied undergrad in Oxford, then came across and went to Harvard Law. Holy shit.
Yeah.
She was some kind of lawyer. Yeah, it's wild that like a criminal defense lawyer of that stature. I guess she was maybe she was like, you know, given back or whatnot. But like, yeah, that's she was kind of slumming in criminal defense.
Yeah. Then we go back to the tunnel where they encounter a ton of walker bodies and bags with their throats cut. And they decide to kill each one and continue on through the passage. One of the walkers almost eats a kid, and Negan decides he's had enough. He's leaving, and several people are ready to go with him, and says, you know, this whole thing has been a ruse by Maggie to just get him out away from the community so she can kill him quietly. And he challenges Maggie to a fight, and then Daryl punches him out, and Maggie says, look, I'll kill you if you keep pushing me, because some weird character beats that I don't actually think track. So here's the biggest problem I have with the scene. I kind of like most of this scene.
Yes.
The huge question mark I have is when Maggie says the only thing keeping you alive is the bit of old me that's left. Oh, you're talking about the bit that remembers that this guy smashed in your husband's head, and you actively wanted to murder him every second of your life. That's the part that's keeping him alive now because the rest of you has changed.
Dude,
shouldn't it be the exact opposite?
What we were talking about last week is like, how are they going to deal with like Maggie Greene? Like, why is she going to be? But the thing is like, I don't know why Negan played it this way, because he was making eloquent point after eloquent point about this being a death march, about, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, Maggie is being a dictator, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even like, does she probably brought me here to die and all that kind of stuff? And then I don't know why, like everything, I feel like everyone is on his side and he pulls out, I'm not going to die on your terms. You're not going to put me down like a dog, like yeah. Glenn.
Right.
Like, honestly, he's really lucky 4 or 5 different people didn't pull pistols and just, you know, perforate him.
Yeah.
I don't know what his plan was there, like to out Maggie as this insanely revenge driven widow that wants to see this guy who's obviously provoking her about the fact that he beat her. It just didn't
but half the people
sense.
Here don't even know who Glenn was,
right?
So it won't right. hit in that way.
But they'll see that, like, you know, it's like I just feel like it was so aggressive, and maybe it's like, okay, well, yeah. this isn't what I would do, but it's something what Negan would do. But you could say that. However, I felt like the last Negan episode, here's Negan, he's just on a different track.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I felt like, again, they could have done this. I like what they're doing. I wish they had slow boiled and built up the tension between Maggie and Negan a little bit more.
I do too.
Just felt, and like I 100% agree. Like, which old Maggie is she talking about? And but on
the one
other
that
hand,
would
I
hang
guess,
Gregory in the town square, the one that told him that I want you dead, but I will see you rot in this cell, and now he's out.
Right.
And
right.
That Maggie
yeah, like,
kills
it's
this
like,
guy.
Oh, I had the innocent Maggie Greene. I was still like holding on to past my father being killed by a madman, past my husband being killed by a madman. Oh, you're that mad? No, I didn't like that. It seemed kind of ahistorical. But I also thought, yeah. if I'm Angela Kang and I was dealt like a pretty rotten hand of cards, and I've got the return of a beloved character, like, do I give her the permission to slightly rewrite Maggie Greene to suit the story they're trying to tell now? And I'm like,
I don't think you need to, though. We've been without yeah. Maggie for 6 years. She could have changed, you know, like,
yeah, you could have leaned into like she's been further traumatized by the Georgie project going bad, by Meridian going bad, all that kind of stuff. I was trying to make the devil's argument.
Well, her temper about Glenn has mellowed a little bit. Like, it's 6 years is a long time, you know.
But I can also understand that, like, if I was away 6 years from the murder of my husband or wife, and I was just thrown into constant, and then not sure. only that, but yeah. like not rotten in jail, kind of working their way back in the,
exactly,
the community.
Yeah.
But it's just some of this stuff just falls flat. Like when Daryl's like, "You don't care about that kid," motherfucker, he was the only one that jumped to that kid's rescue.
It's true.
Like, you can't just like, and like, you know, like, it's like you said, like, shut up, nerd. I'd stop talking about tunnels. You can't dismiss a guy when it's like, I'm watching the show, man. You can't have Daryl just be like, you don't care about that kid. Yo, man, that's the one thing I know Negan does care about.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you're right.
Other than beating people's brains and fucking around with this Bat Lucille, that's his one, this thing that they've established from the beginning, that he's got a soft spot for kids.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I don't know.
They needed Judith along with this group to talk some sense into these adults.
Yeah.
Because everybody here is talking bullshit.
Oh, I wanted to say, we did, I think we skipped something, or maybe I had it in the wrong words, but do you have the scene where Ezekiel calls out the guy in the big pumpkin suit, super suit?
Oh, yeah, that was last scene. We kind of smashed two together.
The guy in charge, I kind of like him. I wonder if we're going to, I didn't look this up. I forgot to, but like, is he the dude that like plays like one of the James Bond liaison guys in the new James Bond? Like, he's like the lieutenant colonel that's like working intelligence or what? He might be, he might not be, but like, I liked him. I liked what he's bringing to the table. The red stormtrooper.
Yeah. I do wonder if Ezekiel has misjudged him. You know, he calls him the asshole beat cop who's just itching to get fascism on in the new world.
Right.
Maybe, maybe not.
And again, like I said, this could all be super fashy, and it certainly looks like it. But also, I mean, yeah, like total global apocalypses are the one places where like really totalitarian shit makes a certain kind of sense
for a while, certainly. Yeah,
like if you literally are making choices between who lives and who dies, like that's authoritarian and fucking, and I wouldn't stand for it. But on the other hand, if like 7 billion people have died and there's only 250 million left, and it's kind of like, no, like you probably have to make decisions like that. So like I was like on a certain amount of board for like all the what the Commonwealth was doing, but then, you know, it's like, where do you draw the line?
For sure.
And when do you stop? What if you go down that path of like Darwinism? At what point in civilization's restabilization do you back away from that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably I'm looking forward to seeing some of those. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing some of those arguments being made.
Yeah. All right. Let's take another quick break and we'll be right back.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, here's where we get the Liu Kang Death Star Gambit, where Princess has apparently gleaned, I don't know how, but she knows everything about the life history of all of these guards that enables them to then steal armor somehow from them off screen, become Han and Luke escorting Chewie through the Death Star. They find something that Zeke dubs the Wall of the Lost, with pictures of people who are flagged for expedited entry into the Commonwealth, I think. And Yumiko's sister has written a note on it to her. And so she decides she's going to stay. Well, right in the middle of their escape plan.
Yeah, for the people that are not watching the show and only listening to the podcast, I just got to say that, like, what Jim's referring to is they're all there. So in when they're in the interrogation rooms, or not in there, they're in this, like, mass holding pen.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of shit we've seen at the border in last years, where it says everything's just like in chain link fences.
Fear the Walking Dead did this early on.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody's in these temporary shelters with, like, just sleeping on pads on the floor. Mm-hmm. And there's guards coming in and grabbing people and taking them here and taking them there. But it's just completely open. And it's not just these two guards that are. So Princess deduces from these stormtroopers are just staying. That's the funny part of it, that, like, they are in love and they sneak away and they do all this kind of stuff. And, like, the whole time I'm like, well, she's just, this is her fantasy. This is like boxcar times a million. She's just now with, like, all this stimulus, she's just, like, making stories up and shit. Mm-hmm. But it turns out all of the stuff that she does is, like, gospel. She's it like some kind be. Of like relationship body language expert. And she deduced two of these stormtroopers are in love and sneak off to go fuck each other. Now, the question is, that's a solid start of a plan. Mm-hmm.
That's a lead.
But then how do we get ourselves out of these cages? How do we get out of these cages when there's literally other guards in the room? How do we get out of these cages when there's literally guards in the other room? They're locked, and everyone, we're in sight of all the other prisoners who are highly incentivized to inform on us when we're doing our daring escape. Uh-huh. Once we do that, where do these people sneak off to make love? We fucking don't know. We've never been in anything but the interrogation room and this big mass detention center. Are they just fucking in a dark corner that they can be seen from? Like, none of that matters. You just have, like, Eugene and Ezekiel and Yumiko cock an eyebrow at each other and smash cut. In fact, I didn't even know what the fuck was happening. I thought they were showing Yumiko, or wait, no, it was Princess and Ezekiel just being taken to another interrogation. Uh-huh. And they were going to, and then they're, like, looking in the rooms, and I'm like, oh, they're going to figure out the plan. Mm-hmm. This was the plan. It turns out the two stormtroopers taking them prisoner were Yumiko and Eugene. So it's like, it's the ballsiest thing I've seen this show pull in a long time.
It's almost played for comedy. It's so ballsy, right?
And I don't hate it, because, again, the alternative is a slapdash 90-second scene that is stupid and makes the stormtroopers look dumb. And so, like, on the other hand, what I'd really love is you guys just to fucking nail it, you know, like point A to point B. And so anyway, it's fucking really, really wild that they tried to pull that off.
I did find it funny when Princess says probably most of the time that hour that they sneak off is spent taking off their armor.
Right.
You're not wrong. It's like, what happens if a mascot has to go to the bathroom during the middle of a sports event? Getting the fucking devil suit off, getting the gritty suit off. Are there zippers in the front?
I mean, they might do. They might be like Apollo astronauts. They just fucking wear diapers.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. Maybe these stormtroopers are all wearing diapers. But then you got to take the diaper off to
when you're wearing the goofy suit in Walt Disney World, mm-hmm. and you're meet and greeting all the, and you're out and like, I know they got, like, air conditioning units and built. There's no way you got a sudden urge to piss. You're just like, oh, kids, I'll be right back. And you scurry off and go to the little boy's room with your baby. There's no fucking way. They just got to be wearing diapers.
Think about that. Every time you go to Disney World, and your kid runs up to hug a Goofy, just think, they're hugging a man in a diaper filled with shit, just overflowing with shit inside that suit.
And the, and really think about Donald Duck, because he's not even wearing pants. So like, what's, what do they do with that?
Damn.
Think about it. Think about it.
What about like the woman who plays Cinderella? You think she's got a diaper on under that dress?
She can just squat over a storm drain. Like, you know, they actually, that's
as a matter of fact, when they line you up for pictures, they're always over storm drains. If you
notice that the Cinderellas and Snow Whites are always, their skirts just fully enveloped the storm. So yeah. Yeah. Cause the mouse don't give bathroom breaks. You think Jeff Bezos is bad?
Oh, right.
You think it's bad? Oh yeah, man. That fucking rat down in Orlando is 1,000 times worse.
We're going to get sued. We're going to get sued by Disney for defamy. That's not it. Oh, defamy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a term. All right.
Bring it, Disney.
Also, this is the scene with the giant cash cart ready for incineration. Yeah. I thought this was a cool detail because it tells you so much about the Commonwealth in just a single shot.
It's not even that it tells you a lot. It's just like a really interesting detail. Like, why?
It gets your brain spinning, right? Your wheels turning about what is the Commonwealth doing that not only are they incinerating cash, but they're X-ing out the faces of the presidents on the cash
before they incinerate it.
Yeah.
Like, are they trying to destroy history for some reason?
They're trying to create a specific future with that, for sure.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Horizon Zero Dawn, where, you know, they're trying to architect a new society and keeping, you know, they were trying to keep the rebooted humanity from making the mistakes of the past by like preventing them from knowing information and stuff. I wonder if they're going for that. It's like they're trying to remake society and they don't want people thinking about freedom and, you know, liberty and individual. Yeah, they want to remake it in some other image.
Certainly could be. And then for the final scene, we go back to the tunnel where they're still sorting out the body bag zombies when they see a train that's blocking their passage and realize, oh, actually, those two dudes who were on Negan's side left and they took a bunch of our supplies, flashlight batteries, apparently, like all the flashlight batteries were in their bags.
Should have three different sources of illumination, at least one not requiring batteries. Right? I'm telling you,
I mean,
basic spelunking would save you guys.
Cave exploration is not in Georgie's book anywhere. Nowhere.
Nope.
Anyway, suddenly a herd starts approaching from their only exit and they try to gain entrance to the train car, but they can't. So they all scramble to get on top of it. Dog runs off and Daryl goes after him. And then Maggie just forgets how to climb. No one has trouble with this except Maggie. She can't climb.
They're hanging on her legs, like, you know. She's
after
tired.
The fifth time she slipped, she's kicking
doing
zombies.
A death march, yeah.
I don't know. Negan stares down the top of the train at her while zombies grab at her legs. Does she actually fall here? I can't. Does she slip? I think she slips.
If I have to guess, they had Dog freak out and run into the rubble to separate Daryl from the group. If I had to guess, Maggie's going to slip beneath the train and Daryl is going to.
This is exactly what we hated about her husband slipping beneath.
Well,
things,
I think it's a
not
little
to be
like,
seen it, for a couple episodes and then out
it'd
she
be
comes.
One thing if one of the biggest badasses in the group was like, you know, hey, I'm going to dive under this fucking dumpster. Like 30 seconds before Glenn crawls under there, then sure. Like that's a little bit. So
and if
like,
she had fallen, arms spread, split out into a grasping group of walkers.
Right.
That'd
it's
be
a little
weird.
Bit of a different situation. But there, I noticed on the subreddit that there's people making some uncomfortable, like, you know, Glenn dumpster comparison theory. But like, it's next week. Honestly, I read is that these were supposed to. I don't know why AMC changed it because they hate us. They hate all of us viewers. But they were going to air these back to back as like a 2-hour premiere. So like, if that was the intention from like the writer's room, then like, they are completely blameless. Like this is not even a cliffhanger again. Like even if you take it at face value, it's not a cliffhanger because surely you don't think Maggie's going to die. Like you have seen the trailers for the season. Right. But also like, it's supposed to be like almost a commercial break cliffhanger. So who gives a fuck?
And even if it was a weak cliffhanger, I'm totally sympathetic to week long cliffhangers. What I don't like is when
Mad all the time
they do this shit over the course of a season break.
Yes. Or if they make it to where it's like insults your intelligence. Like, it's one thing to show people in jeopardy, like if Walt and Jesse are like hanging over a industrial shredder and they're about to slip and they cut the like. But if you show them falling into the gears and they're screaming and their blood flying, and then like 3 weeks later, they're like, actually, what happened was Walt had rigged his legs with blood. Actually, that sounds kind of cool. But you know what I mean?
Bags. Yeah, sure. Why would he do that?
He whipped up some blood bags in the kitchen and he said, somehow I wanted to make Gus think that he got ground up. Is that, you remember that season four plot where Gus strung him up over the industrial shredder? And
oh, yeah. The season was bookended with box cutter and industrial shredder. Those were the two episodes. Yeah.
It's just like every time Gus amped up what he used to cut somebody. He used a lawnmower in episode three.
The number of blades were
compounded
every week. Yeah.
He used the Schick Mach Turbo 7 at one point. The seven independent blades. The vibrate. I feel like that. Again, that's not the problem with this episode. I think the big problems were the fact that Negan was absolutely right, and they had to, for some reason, make him an asshole so everyone had turned this bite. And you know, the escape plan, the Ocean's 11 plan that we didn't get to see. You know,
yeah.
I mean, what? Imagine Ocean's 11
next week.
Ocean's 11, they cut from Danny Ocean saying, "Hey, I'm planning on knocking off this casino," to them standing outside the Bellagio watching at the fountains.
That's Andy Garcia's watching them walk out with money. Yeah.
Satisfying movie, guys. Fuck? Yeah. That's a real, real arc we went on. Wow.
Yeah. I'm with you. I was a little let down by the Maggie in this final scene, not being able to climb what essentially amounts to a ladder. The other thing I was let down is her fighters. Here we are 12 plus years into the apocalypse. She's got claiming that her best fighters, including Shoulders, are like here along with her. And then I see Shoulders hit a zombie in the stomach in this scene.
Trying to knock the wind out of it, are you, big guy?
Right.
Yeah. Like, hand-to-handing zombies is always a dubious proposition. But if you're not even going for the off button, what the hell?
Right. Like, it's and this thing, is like, our best fighter.
Or if you like kick out their knees. So like, you know, that's one thing, like punching a zombie in the gut. Yeah.
I don't think it would have mattered if they were at Meridian. I think the Reapers still take it.
Then he gives him two for flinching.
Right.
The follow up he gets from him.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, also, I thought it was like, I just don't get what they're doing with Negan, because I thought they're going to do the reverse Scar from The Lion King. Where he grabs her and lets her know that, like, I hold your life in your hand. And maybe it's because it's self-interest or whatever. But like, I've got the power over you and I'm not going to kill you would be such a more interesting place to take her development than him doing the, like, he didn't even do the Scar. He did the pussy form of Scar, which, like,
just watched. Yeah.
Yeah. Just watched and then turned ears back. Like, honestly, he should have just kept going. And then he could, like, with straight face being like, oh, my God, she was right behind me.
Yeah, I was behind Boston Rob the whole time. He saw me. I was riding him piggyback.
Yeah, there's all panicked. And it's like, I don't know. Like, Daryl got separated. Maggie screamed for him. Like, there's like, I just don't understand why they're making him be the stupidest version of this.
So I have an inkling as to why it is. And I honestly just think it's trying to subvert the expectations of the audience at all costs, because this is something The Walking Dead does a lot.
Yeah, they love to do that.
They do it and it fails and they do it again.
We surprised you. Aren't you happy? Aren't you happy that, like, all the things you thought we were going to do, we didn't do that.
Right.
We did something dumber.
All those good ideas you guys had on Reddit, we did none of them. We did the stupidest thing possible. So did you watch the, like, after episode stuff with Angela Kang talking about this episode? She said specifically, like, the thing you always see people do in these movies is exactly what you just described, the grabbing them and saving them when by all rights they shouldn't. And so to me, that says, hey, we just wanted to do the thing that was contrary to what you see all the time, even if it's not as dramatically interesting, even if it doesn't make as much sense for the characters, we're going to do it.
I guess it is interesting if, like, Negan literally, like, if he mean mugs Maggie and turns his back and runs with the group, if he insists that, like, I don't know what she's talking about, she's trying to, like, he's like playing like next level Machiavelli. Like, he's already got like, oh, well, if she survives and makes it back, I'll just deny everything. And I've already we've already established everybody knows that she's crazy to kill me and she's going to try to do it. She's going to try to frame me. She's going to try to do so. Like,
well, the people who were on his side ran. They didn't.
But is that like what is fucking what would Lucille want him to do? I thought he was going to start fighting for her. I thought he was going to start, like, you know, living up to his potential and stuff. This Baltar, Dr. Baltar from Battlestar bullshit is not what I was expecting from him.
Yeah.
So I hope they find a way to make this guy more interesting, because right now, like, I'm in this weird position where, like, I want to hate Maggie because she's acting irrationally, but I do understand. Mm-hmm. But Negan is just so fucking right. Like, Maggie is like taking this. She's like caroling this whole situation.
Yeah.
Where she's decided what she thinks is right and she's in charge and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I can't get on the Negan bandwagon because he's just being such a fucking antagonistic asshole.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. We'll see in Acheron Part 2 next week.
And we'll see what you guys and gals think about this episode. Please send us your feedback to watchingdead@baldmove.com. We're going to be considering that sometime at the middle of the week. It'll probably come out, actually,
Wednesday,
we're going to be considering it live on our Working Wednesday stream. Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We're going to start. Are we starting with the feedback? Yeah, we are.
So.
So Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on twitch.tv /baldmove, 1 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be live doing the feedback show. It will be out later, probably a Thursday, I imagine. And then we're also going to do a live podcast on Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
So check that out if you want to see us record some stuff live. Otherwise, yeah, send in stuff to watchingdead@baldmove.com. I'm really excited to see what other people thought. Like I said, I'm not opposed to coming at this show from the top buckle of the ropes with my elbow, the people's elbow, coming at it, and it's getting to, you know,
I just want this last season to be fun, man.
Yeah.
with us, just, you know, if the episode deserves us cracking on it, we'll do it. Probably a little if it doesn't, but,
and they'll probably have some good character moments, which I'll enjoy, and some of the set pieces are gonna be fun, because, like, I do think that they are way better at doing and executing set pieces now.
Yeah.
And like I said, I kind of admired a decision to, instead of doing a shitty set piece, just fucking yada yada. Like, you know what? These are badasses, right? They're resourceful.
Sure.
You can see how they would do something like this. I kind of like that. But what did you think? WatchingDead@baldmove.com is how you get in touch with us to let us know. So we will see you next week for the next episode. Again, these things will be dropping at the 9 p.m. Eastern, the same time that AMC airs them live. And then we'll have the feedback episode out midweek.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Talk to you guys later.